Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. We could really use the help. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, though, I want to tell you about our new monthly guidebook / workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians, and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your career and your musical life on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from MyMusicMasterclass.com. So if you want to learn more, go to MyMusicMasterclass.com and you'll see the subscribe link in the menu. Click that and you'll be good to go. All right, everyone. We are here today with Yotam Silberstein, and he is a super cool guy and a great guitarist. Originally from Alabama. No, I'm just kidding. From Israel. And, you know, he's been here since, I think, 2005-ish, and he's played with tons of cats, James Moody and Roy Hargrove, Big George Coleman, Dave Sanborn, and you know, John Patitucci and many, many more. And he's also on My Music Masterclass. He's got some great videos there. And what's up, man? You surviving?
I'm still here, still alive. Happy to see some familiar faces.
Yeah, man. So like you're kind of a spiritual cat in the way of at least meditation and in paying attention to your body. I don't know if it transcends into religion or anything, but I know that you're into meditation and cleansing and things like that. Have you been doing anything in this quarantine to keep your head straight?
Actually, I have been working out, which has been the best thing that I've done. You know, that's really keeps me same, but not, you know, as all of the fathers among us know, that you don't really have time to do much, man.
No.
So I'm really trying to make use of my time, you know, trying to practice music, write music every day, trying to leave time for that. Even after the kids go to sleep, I'll be up, you know, working. Because otherwise I'll be depressed. You know, I have to do those are the things that I have to do to keep my soul balanced.
I'm with you, man. For me, it's been tough. Everyone knows, everyone with a kid, at least in this area, that believes that there's a virus, which I do, and I know Yotam does, and Jake, because I've seen people die already, and this isn't a joke.
I wish our president was on the same boat.
Yes, that would be interesting.
Am I allowed to say that on the podcast?
You can say whatever you want. But the point being is that you know, we haven't had any babysitters in. We haven't had any camp, anything like that up until this point. And for anyone, you know, me running the website or, you know, any musician trying to get anything going for money right now, there's no backup. And if you have a spouse that works or a partner that works, then you're both trying to even it out and be good parents. And it's very challenging, and I'm with you. I work at
you nailed
it. If I get up at 6 a.m I work, like if I just happen to be up, and after he goes to bed, yeah, I start working at 8:30, you know, whatever.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's a good lesson too, because otherwise sometimes if you do have a lot of time, you're not really making such a good use of it as if it was solid. That's the best parent, that's the best lesson that parenthood taught me, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're talking about tightening up your schedule, for sure.
No messing around, man.
No, if you have an hour, that's like golden. You got to get to it.
That's something music teaches a lot of people, too, though. You know, it teaches you that discipline. Same with, like, martial arts. And
if you're serious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely. And actually, that's something that I work on with my students too, how to use your time, you know?
It doesn't take as much as people think. You know, students get very overwhelmed thinking they have to, like, you know, there is a time in your life, and a lot of musicians have gone through it, where, yeah, maybe you're actually practicing like 8 to 12 hours a day, like epic college years, you know what I mean? But it doesn't have to be like that. So I feel like if students can't do that, then they're just like, well, I just can't do that. It's like, dude, like 15 minutes a day will make you a fucking rock star. Like, if you do it right, you know?
I feel like a lot of it is actually psychology, and I feel like I teach a lot, and I really love teaching. I enjoy it. I like connecting with the students, and I would say more than 50% of my work a lot of times is like, it's almost like therapy, you know, like, yep. It's like getting into their head and see what blocks them from moving on. Cause a lot of times it's like some like preconceptions about things, you know, and like fear and insecurity. So I think it kind of relates to them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason people say have your child go into music. It really is like an overall big thing that you can learn so many things from, like on mental health, everything, right. Like
finance.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually just talked to Jeremy Manasseh, who is an old friend of mine, and he still teaches at, you know, Manhattan School of Music. And Jeremy's been doing Zen Buddhism, practicing it for 15 years.
Sure.
And I remember when he went into it, we were playing Smoke, and he started just getting into Zen and dabbling. And now he's, you know, it's such a big part of his life. But one of the things he said is that musicians are made for that kind of meditation work, because if they're serious and they're practicing and they're alone with in the room focusing on one thing, they are essentially practicing. And he said that meditation is like the practice of meditation. Like, you practice, it's totally goes hand in hand, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, man. And like, there's something to be said for doing, like, to have a ritual, to do something every day, do the same thing and repeat it every day. It's a very powerful thing for our brain, man.
Yeah, man. Do you cook and stuff too? I think you used to, right?
Yeah, it's like after music, like food is like, you can also see that I've gained some pounds, man. I think during the quarantine,
shit happens. No judgments, you know.
Yeah, I've always wanted to get into baking, and I really got.
I was just gonna ask, actually, like, do you make your own like breads? Like, because I want to start making my own Arabic bread for when I do like home.
What do you mean Arabic bread?
Like, just like flat bread. Well, you know,
mean like laffa bread or something?
Well,
like,
yeah. My family's from Lebanon. You know, I call it Arabic bread.
Yeah, so in Lebanon, they have like this, it's like a flat bread,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
but you can do it right on a cast iron skillet.
Absolutely,
right on your stovetop.
I do the Israeli version, which is a pita with a pocket, you know, that you can fill it in with.
You see it rise right on the pan. Exactly. It's awesome.
So, yeah, man, baking pizza, focaccia. You know, nice. All that.
You do it all. Yeah. Do you have the perfect hummus recipe?
Perfect for me, man.
Yeah.
What do you got?
I was gonna
you don't make your own tahini or anything. That's just
nuts, right? Make your own tahini. Like, I don't think anybody has the equipment, because you have to grind like
the sesame.
I have a tahini mill in my basement. It's about, no.
That would be the next step, man. But you know,
that's like the hipster thing, is like getting your own tahini mill, like hand grind it.
Yeah, I would actually be curious, but I actually get like a very, very good tahini that I get from Israel.
Shit.
Sumerian. Sumerian? How do you say Sumerian?
The Sumerians?
Yeah, Sumerians that live like in territories.
Oh, man.
You make it, it's like an old recipe, and it's like, next time I see you, I'm going to get you a box, man. It's like,
you could just like eat it right from the fucking can, right?
You sure can, and it's like, it's really like... People, like, when people talk about hummus, they don't understand how much I think that tahini really is like.
Yeah, because chickpeas are like just chickpeas. You know what I mean? The tahini
is.
Also,
want to get the if you get the chickpeas, get the small ones.
Oh.
Small ones are more right for hummus. They have like.
Do you take the shells off?
I used to, but I don't really.
It's a process.
Actually, the good thing about the small ones is it kind of deteriorates.
Yeah. It just falls right off.
So if you cook it well enough, long enough.
I'll ask you another thing. Do you do you throw in cumin?
How could you not, man?
A lot of the Lebanese don't. The Lebanese like it like
question
super
that,
super lemony and super garlicky. Like I like cumin.
I like coriander too, man. You
got coriander is not real, not in hummus. Nope. Not for me.
Not me either.
Not for me. But I do put, I do cook it. When I cook the peas, I cook them with the garlic and with onions.
Ah, all right. Okay.
So you get them all nice and soft together.
And the water, you. Like the water gets get the taste. And one thing that I've been doing lately is that I have not, I'm not putting not using the water, the cooking water. A lot of people are using the cooking water. I'm not. I started using ice instead of that. Hmm. And then somehow it's like more, it's creamier.
Yeah.
And it's more, a little more like white. The color is more.
You know what else is fun is for the olive oil and for the garlic, like just roast the garlic in olive oil. So then you have infused garlic, olive oil, and roasted garlic. I do it
on a daily basis, man.
Oh, hell yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, man.
See, this is cooking with Yotam.
I love this.
So when you came from Israel, were you in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv? I don't know where you lived when you were there.
Around Tel Aviv, closer to Tel Aviv.
And were you in school before you went to the new school? Because I know you got a scholarship at the new school.
I went to, after I got out of the army, I went for 6 months to Jerusalem to study classical composition.
Nice.
I didn't really, the academic world and I are not really that much of a friend, you know, so I didn't really, I wanted to play, man. I wanted to play jazz and I wanted to practice and I wanted to, and that program was very, very demanding and took a lot of time. It was fascinating. And actually in those 6 months, I've learned so much, and I've learned classical piano and I've studied composition with some great teachers, but I wanted to go to New York, you know, and play jazz and do my own thing.
So you got a scholarship to New School. Who were you studying while you were there? Was it who was there in 2005? I'm trying to think.
So the first semester I studied with Vic Juris.
Nice.
He was my first teacher. And then I studied with, my thing was because in the New School, you can take lessons with whoever you want. So I took lessons with so many different people, with Peter Bernstein, with Adam Rogers, with Jonathan Kreisberg, I took some composition classes with Kirk Newrock. I studied with Lee Konitz, man.
Nice.
That was an incredible,
oh, yeah.
Really special experience. And he was very, I used to just go to his house and spend time with him. And I studied with, who else did I take lessons with? Sammy Ahel.
Nice, sure.
And with Aaron Goldberg and with Chris Cheek. And with bunch of different people. I hope I'm not forgetting anybody.
Yeah, everyone was there. I mean, I remember Vic was there at that time too. And
Vic was actually part of the faculty, but all those people were just outside of the faculty.
I think now it's Bernstein and some other guys, right? I don't even know.
I don't think Pete is in faculty.
Oh, no?
I think Steve Cardenas and
Cardenas.
Rory Stewart and this guy named Richard Bukas.
Oh, okay.
Who's been there for a while. I think that's the game.
So as a newcomer to New York and to the country, how was your approach? I know you were hungry to play and learn. What was your approach to getting gigs? Because, I'm sure a lot of people come and ask you, how did you make it into the scene, or how do you do this or that? But you had the extra added degree of difficulty by coming in from another country,
big time.
Yeah. So how did you make that happen? What was your philosophy?
Honestly, I would say that my beginning in New York was very difficult. It was not that fast that I started to play gigs, which was a very difficult move, from Israel, because in Israel I was playing every night, man, and recording with everybody, and I was definitely one of the guys. And here I'm just nobody, moving. Nobody knows me. I felt that. And I think it was also a very good thing for me at the time.
Humbling.
Yeah, definitely. And so my thing was just I started to play. I wanted to play. So I started to play with as many people. I had a friend. I mean, he's still a friend of mine, Ari Roland, great bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me something that really, really changed my perspective. He said, try to play every week with as many people, as many new people as you can. And I did that, man. And I played with so many people, just sessions at houses, and gigs for no, almost no pay. I used to come to the new school in the morning with my amp in a car, you know, in the subway. And then after that, I had two gigs almost every night, man, like nice. One gig and then play a late night at Fat Cat or Fat Cat, like with the, you know, with the bar, remember with the,
yes,
with the wall.
There was like a room divider. Just there was.
Yeah, man. So that was really cool, man. 15 years ago, man. I can't believe how crazy fast it was, man. But exactly. Yeah, so that was my thing, you know, just starting to play with people as much as I can with the city. But yeah, then my real like break, I would say, quote unquote, came as a result of the Hmong competition. I got invited to do the Betty Carter program. And then for the Betty Carter, I met Nathan Davis, the late, great Nathan Davis, who kind of took me under his wing and introduced me to James Moody and to Curtis Fuller and to like John Lee and Monty Alexander and Paquito. And basically like, it's kind of like a chain reaction. You know, you get one gig and then like, oh, you meet this guy. Oh, cool, man. And you all know how it is, man.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, man. And just happened.
I have like a specific question. It might be like too specific, but like when sort of like, was it during New York or before, like when did you get to that level of like how you play solo guitar? Cause I remember like watching you at a show and you like sometimes you'll start a tune, just you, and that just like is badass. But like, were you already sort of like doing that kind of stuff when you got to New York? Or
so funny that you say that, because so here's a moment, because I feel in my mind I'm like the worst solo guitarist in the world. I feel so insecure. But now I gotta say, like during the one project that I took for the quarantine, as a result of not being able to play with anybody, I said, fuck man, I want to be a badass at solo guitar. And I've been doing that. So hopefully next time you'll see me, it'll be a lot better. I promise.
I mean, maybe you were just more confident because you were just treating it as like an intro or something like that. But I just remember like being floored, because it was just, it was like smooth and like you were just in it. And that's like what people miss. Right? Yeah, they miss from like solo guitar. It's like they're trying too much, you know?
That was at Sam First?
Yeah, I think it was that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. I would solo guitar for me is like, wow, it's probably like the hardest of all of them, you know?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, what's your approach to it? I mean,
so my approach to it right now is, first of all, just to be able to just play tunes. So every day in my room, my thing is just, I'm taking the tune, I'm just playing the tune, man, and recording myself. Yeah. I feel that recording yourself is such a useful tool for us. It's crazy. It's like a mirror, right? Yeah. And I, of course, if you take it the right way, if you're being constructive and not being over.
Yeah, you got to be ready for it.
Yeah, so that's my thing. I'm just playing tunes at home, solo guitar, trying to make sure that nobody is deprived. The bass, you know, I can still, there's the bass going on, harmony, some melody. So trying to treat everybody equal.
You know, one of the things, and this is something we were talking about yesterday when we did this podcast with Jeremy, is the transcription thing. And I think I mentioned you even in this article we wrote for The Motivated Musician on transcription, because wasn't it you that said that you even transcribe Bach?
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, so like, you take it that far, and like, I understand why that's important, but what do you tell your students about transcription?
The transcription is everything. That what we do is a language. Jazz, or whatever you want to call it, bam, you know, or it's a language. It's a language. It's like a father, like a story that a father will tell his child. And it's the way us humans learn a language is by imitating our ancestors, you know. And a baby doesn't learn by reading. Yeah. Or by,
I mean, you know, it's why you try not to swear in the household when you get like a 4-year-old, you know.
I
do your best.
Can't help, but yeah, man. It's a language, and at least I've done a lot of transcription. It's like my life, you know, and it's just the best tool, man. It's just like, I have not found a better tool for improving in those fields in music, man. Maybe it's like a little bombastic declaration, but I don't know.
You ever mess with like left-hand voicings from pianists, or do you just take the lines?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I transcribe everything. So like Adam said, right. I transcribe Bach, you know, like inventions and like some guitar music. I would even transcribe some choral music, just try to get the voices. I feel like it's a better way to learn music because you're gaining a lot more.
Yeah. You know what I've always wanted to jump into is the like Palestrina harmonies. I got a book on that stuff once, but it was like way like overly academic. I have to try and like figure out another route into that. That shit's awesome.
That's transcribing. That we studied when I studied in Jerusalem.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Fuck, dude.
Yeah. I mean, the whole transcription thing is true though. I mean, because in my mind, it's exactly what you said. It's not only just the best way to internalize language, but it's literally helping in all these other tasks that you would practice, such as ear training or you know, any ear training being the biggest. You know, I mean, when you're on the bandstand, being able to navigate the harmonies coming at you and reacting, it's like it's all in one task.
Yeah,
absolutely.
People still look for the transcriptions online if they can get them, and it's which can be helpful sometimes if you have to learn something quickly, but it shouldn't be, what's the word? It shouldn't be a replacement. No.
Absolutely. And I, you know, also like, what is transcription? Like for a lot of people, like, okay, I transcribed the solo, so I wrote it. When I say transcribe, what I mean is actually to be able to play it on your instrument perfectly.
Right.
That's what I never write it down or anything like, not that it's not important, but it's not what I'm trying to get.
And I think also like the hard thing about it, which separates it a little bit from like a spoken language, is like if you learn words as a human being in like English or something like that, you don't have to practice it in every emotion. But like with music, you have to practice it in different keys. So it's like there is like an added times 12
kind of situation.
Yeah. So there's a lot more to it, but like that should be fun, you know?
Yeah, man. I think also after a while that you already practiced a lot in different keys,
it just comes.
It just becomes less of an issue.
And that's why you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you do it. Exactly. Because eventually, you know, you will enjoy the fruits of your labor.
But even with language, it completely goes hand in hand. Like some people are better at speaking. You can listen to someone speak and they give this amazing, they're just natural speakers. Some people are great storytellers. You know, some people just can get up to a microphone and they're engaging. And, you know, you see a comedian like a, I don't know, Dave Chappelle or someone. It's like he was born to be on a microphone.
Yeah.
You see, you know, so it's like, it really is a similar thing. Everyone can get the basics of the 12 notes. Everyone can play them, I believe, on some form of instrument. You can play them on piano pretty easily, but turning them into a story is difficult.
Oh, yeah.
You
know?
Totally, bro. Totally.
So what have you been doing now musically? You said you've been practicing solo. I know that you did a couple of those, you know, virtual videos where you were playing with some other cats.
I did 20 videos. It's called Quarantine Duos. And I picked 20 musicians that I love, and I invited them to do those, you know, online duos. Everybody played their own part, and then
love it.
Yeah, man. So actually, I'm very proud of it because some beautiful stuff came. That was in the beginning of the quarantine. Then I kind of, you know, went into another phase.
So you guys have been in New York the whole time, right? You haven't been back to Israel, or
I mean, we actually went. You know, we went to Kingston. We spent some time in Kingston. We've been, you know, we have a car, so we try to get, it's hard here in the city, so we go upstate, you know, or we go to the beach and stuff like that just to get some air.
How are your relatives, your family in Israel doing? Are they, I haven't even heard about the virus there. They must be feeling it just like everyone, right?
It's funny because in the beginning, there was almost zero cases. They handled it very, very well.
Yeah.
But unfortunately now, like many other places in the world, it's mixed with politics now, like the virus, and like it's there's a very, very there's a political emergency in Israel now. Like there's a lot of mess going on. Yeah, so it's like it's all kind of like everything is together. And now the virus, like the numbers are going up like crazy too.
I noticed on your schedule that you have some dates in October. Is that happening, or are you hoping they're happening?
I guess I forgot to.
Did I find a typo? It was because one of them was in Japan. I was going to say that's optimistic.
Yeah, we were supposed to have a tour in Japan.
Oh, man.
I was supposed to be in Japan twice this year. Both of them got canceled. I was supposed to record a new album. That didn't happen either. But I'm trying to do other. I'm taking some alternative routes. You know, I'm trying to stay creative.
Yeah, man. What's your advice to other people in your space? Like when you say that you're able to practice at night or work at night in general, how do you clear your mind before? And wipe away everything that happened during the day before you can get creative. Because I know I have my ways, because I have to be on from this time, this 45 minutes to whatever it is. And I know you don't have a lot of time to set your mind straight. So what do you do? Is it just like the way you are? Is your army training?
Because you have to. I mean, you don't have a choice. You know, that's the only time. If you're not going to be there, there's not going to be any time. So I'm not willing to take that responsibility. So I just do it. And even if I'm... A lot of times, yeah, I'm like, I'm beat, man. I'm going to do it, man. I'm going to drink a coffee, you know, just do it.
Just stay up.
Yeah, otherwise, like, I'm not going to do it, and I'm going to be very sad.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like what Jeremy was talking about yesterday with when I asked him, like, you know, after you meditate or something like that, you remind yourself to remember how that feels, so you do it again. And he's like, I don't even have to do that. He trusts that, like, he knows that if he starts to do something that he loves, then that will make him, it'll give him the energy to do it. You know? So I think music's like that.
I can totally resonate with it.
Yeah. You just got to trust it. Once you start doing it, it'll wake you up. It'll get you in it. That's hard. That's hard.
I mean, I think like, yeah, it's hard and it's, but also if you do it, it's like, that's going to already put you in another position.
Yeah.
So once things get back to kind of somewhat normal, at least, you know, whenever that may be, what is your plans for this new record? Like, what's going on with it?
Well, it's funny because it was supposed to be an organ trio.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I mean, I have a few different projects in the works. So that one was going to be an organ trio. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm actually going to record a new album, like... there's a label now in France that releases like three tracks, an album of three tracks, like an LP or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's kind of EP, cool. I guess, not an LP.
Right.
EP. Yeah.
They invited me, and I'm going to do a duet with Kevin Hayes.
Oh, that's great.
I'm going to do a duo. So
that'll be fun.
Three songs. We still have not decided what the songs will be, but they will be.
Are you going to do it live?
Yeah, we're going to do it live, like Orange Sheep. Obviously, right. We're going to be in different rooms, you know, with masks and everything.
My friend's got a great studio in Long Island City with a nice B3 if you need that. He's been doing things socially distanced and it's been
working. Yeah, I remember that studio.
Oh, yeah, the one we were at twice.
Yeah, we were supposed to go to Paris, man. We were supposed to have a tour and that was supposed to be part of the tour, you know, like to go and...
Right.
And guess what, man?
It's not happening?
Things change.
Yeah, a lot of tours, you know.
Yeah, it's not I Love Paris during COVID times. It's not the lyrics.
Oh, man.
So you said you've been doing a lot of teaching now. How have your students been holding up? Like, have they been talking to you about the stress of this situation and maybe you're trying to give them, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel or anything, or yeah, telling them to relax?
I kind of feel that, like, music has, like, a... I know it sounds a cliche, but music really has healing powers, man. Like, so I feel like a lot of people that are dealing with music, I think they're able to kind of use it as a remedy, you know?
yeah.
So that's something that I like, I don't know. I can only speak for myself. And I would say that like I told you in the beginning of the conversation, like I know what keeps me, you know, sane. And I know that like, if I know that I play at least like an hour and a half every day, that already will make me, I will sleep better at night. If I work out, if I run or bike, that will do it too. If I spend time with my kids, my wife. So I'm trying to one thing like is just trying to be organized and, you know, like, you know, make sure you do all those things. Yeah. It's kind of like a checklist, you know?
Yeah. And just hopefully, you know, and keeping the stream of gigs coming, you know, in whatever form they are, I guess.
I don't know,
right?
About that, man. I really don't know what's going to happen. Like, we'll see, man. I really miss playing and traveling. I also enjoy being at home. I got to say, I haven't been home for this long. I don't know since when.
Right.
And I also enjoy it, man. My son enjoys it. Both of my kids enjoy it. My wife enjoys it. But I also miss playing. So it's kind of a conflict, you know? Like,
yeah.
In the end, there'll be balance, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Hopefully. Man, from your mouth to Allah's ears.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But man, we got to do another video sometime. You know,
I gotta come
a lot of people have been
some new shit, man. I gotta.
Oh, you have plenty of stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I gotta say those videos, man. I've gotten a lot of very, very positive feedback from people, which has been great, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're great. You know, you lay it out in a really understandable way, and you know, you have a lot of good stuff to share. I'm sure you have more in you. I can't imagine.
I gotta come up with maybe something Brazilian would be nice.
There you go.
Yeah, people cool. People definitely dig like the Luciana stuff and
Chico
and Atmato and Chico.
Yeah,
they love that stuff.
Oh yeah, he did something, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's shit.
He did one. He did one on a basic Brazilian stuff, you know, just showing all the different styles. And then he did his jazz comping kind of thing, you know.
He's great.
Yeah. But you know, man, thanks so much for being with us, dude.
Oh, and thanks for inviting me, man. It's fun.
And yeah, and you know, next when you have an idea, we'll figure out how to get it done. We've been doing a lot of stuff from people's homes, and they're able to sell it to the people and, you know, monetize and
make
people happy. Yeah, it's all been going really well. And we have ways of pulling it off pretty easily now. We're kind of fine-tuned.
Nice, man.
So yeah, it's just up to you. Maybe that'll be something. Yeah, exactly. It'll be, you know, a good time to think it through.
Right on.
Yeah. All right, brother. Thanks so much for being on. And
see you guys,
talk soon.
Yeah. Be well. Be safe. And let's be in touch, huh?
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So, look forward to hearing from you.